step-by-step created a much better learning organization than it was ever before. But also it created an outcome focus. So instead of two-year, three-year development cycles, we had back then, we had like a 30-day cycle. It was a huge change.
This is the Delivery Space podcast. Whether you're interested in software delivery, business change, or transformation, we have some great content lined up for you. We launch into areas of project and product delivery and bring you insights and experiences that you won't get from a book. Welcome, I'm Nisha, and this is your episode on Unlocking Agility, the Power of Learning Organizations. Hello, Zolt, how are you?
Hi, Nisha. Thank you so much. I'm doing great. And thank you for the invitation.
We've got a great guest on today. His name is Zolt Berend. Zolt, would you be able to introduce yourself to our audience so they can get to learn a little bit about you?
So I'm Zolt, and I'm a business agility coach, practitioner, and trainer. And probably what's really relevant, how it started for me almost 20 years ago in Pennsylvania, when I witnessed and experienced firsthand going through a big change, a big transformation, where actually we needed to read a book. So there was one book that was my first book I read, which was Agile Software Development with Scrum. That was Ken Schwober, Mike Beadle. And what's interesting in this book still for this context we talk about today, that it had lots of examples, lots of scenarios, lots of experience shared. So it wasn't just theory, 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 or the theory was there. Concepts were there as well, but it was a lot of experience these authors shared. And that was awesome. So we actually followed the book. It was a really, really interesting experiment. We worked back then in classic, really classic cubicles. So when you watch those movies in the US, so that classic cubicle, so when you can only talk to people, when you pop up and you see the heads and, you know, above the cubicles, that was our environment. That's how we started, in those cubicles. So no real communication or collaboration because we lived in our cubicles.
So that was your working life, right?
That was our working experience. So that we tear down the cubicles, we removed those cubicles and we started doing things like, which was back then in the book, to create a team room. Mm-hmm. And so the team room was a positive step change around your knowledge sharing, information, collaboration, working together as a team. So that was a massive positive step change and that experience. But also we had things like pair programming back then. People were sitting next to each other because the book talked a lot about XP and extreme programming and doing it with Scrum. So it was interesting niche. So I've seen pair programming and seeing continuous integration with cruise control. Every 15 minutes there was an integration happened all across. It was a hospital information system with validated acceptance tests running, and so having a whole production build. That was my experience. And since then, I worked as a coach practitioner, helping organization to focusing on outcomes, to focusing on creating better ways of working and customer outcomes. So I moved around a lot. So I was in Pennsylvania back then, but then in New York, worked for big financial institution, investment bank. Then in Budapest, where I'm originally from, was born, and probably you can tell from my accent. And then came to the UK. So 10 years now in the UK, and it's a great absolute privilege when John Smart asked me to write a chapter in his book. So we worked together. And since then, also helping organization to achieve better outcomes. And here we are.
And that's how we got to know each other, Zolt, right? Where you were doing some work for Nationwide to help set them up in the best way. Again, focused on outcomes, looking at the setup of OKRs and things like that. It's setting up a way of working and a way of thinking around value that they needed to be able to extract from their program. So when we will talk about that later, but what I want to do is I want to delve into your first experience, because I find that intriguing, your Pennsylvania experience. And first of all, it's really fortunate that you got such a positive experience. And I know you and I have talked about it before. It wasn't smooth sailing, but it was still a really positive experience that you got from that, and bringing agility into that organization where you were forming that hospital management system. describe to me how that team that you were part of, describe to me their reaction and their response to those cubicles being taken away, the team rooms being formed, more agility, more agile practices being brought into the team. How did they respond? What was that like?
I mean, the whole experience was a unique experience for everybody because we don't know anything. So for me, it was new. For everybody, it was new. And I was quite in the central team to actually contributing. So it was, again, an awesome opportunity for me to being involved in something which is brand new. But in terms of the setup, it's a quite complex thing because we had an entire hospital information system, oncology, operating room, cardiology. And then when we started, those were not even integratable. So it was all fragmented and it was all traditional requirement driven, long requirement documents and everything, BQA around looking at all, everything in terms of the requirements, but not really the outcome. So we couldn't bring it together as a product because it was just no collaboration and a lot of silos. So when this came along and then, there were a lot of anxiety around, for example, that analysts were told that, you need to start using post-its and, things like that, which we know now better. But back then it was like one way or the other. So you go from a 60, 70 pages concepts of requirement document into a couple of post-its. And they were like, no way. I can't express things in a single post-it. So there were a lot of things around XP, around the three C's, which is with the right intent, the car, the collaboration and the criteria. So the three C's around the post-its. So a lot of things took a lot of time to go through iteration. And at the beginning, it didn't seem like it's actually going to work at all. But then all these, especially the increased collaboration and the increased sharing of the knowledge, and also the increased technical excellence around start integrating with the different boxes at different departments into one single code base encouraged the conversation to be happening across the organization within teams, but also across the organization. So actually it is by step created a much better learning organization than it was ever before, but also it created an outcome focus. So instead of 2 year, 3 year development cycles, we had back then, we had like a 30-day cycle. It was a huge change and we made those events public. So you could go to the planning meeting, you could go to the review and show and tell because it was publicly announced when those things are happening. I was facilitating one of those show and tells when actually I invited also a lot of customers to come along. And many people were saying that don't invite them. But we had like 50 people and many, many customers, and they were asking the question, is this really a working software? Can we take it to a hospital? Can we actually try it? Can we use it? So we said, yeah, absolutely. It's not a flat file. It's not a PowerPoint. It's not a Photoshop.
There's no smoke and mirrors here, mate. Yes.
Exactly. So it's actually a package. It's a working code and you can take it. And that was the pivotal moment for me. That was eye-opening because this was first time when we actually learned, and also the customer learned, that what the person was, he or she was asking for is not exactly how it should work, because back then they were trying to translate the paper-based hospital information system to a software-based hospital information. So it was a huge pivot back then. There was no single patient record. So that was times where there was no electronic record of really anything, and it was pretty much paper-based. So then all these things, what works in a paper-based world, not necessarily work in an electronic world with monitors. So then we needed to learn where to put the vital signs in the operating room so that it is all accessible and so on. But also the person who gave those requirements originally learned that actually, now I see that. First of all, I see that how long it takes for you to give me something. It's much better than it was ever before. But also now, because it was quick, I can reflect on that actually, this is not what I want. This is what we need. So it's the customer is learning that I'm not going to give you a long requirement document with hundreds of requirements. But actually, if we quickly turn it around, we can learn it what is really be useful in having it in a hospital settings. So it's learning, keep learning from the customer.
It's learning all around. It's like 360 learning that you had all the way from the developers to those analysts that you had at that time specifying requirements, and also customers. You're opening their eyes up to say, actually, a two-year plan, even a one-year roadmap is nothing more than intention. You can deliver more so much frequently and then see that roadmap and that intention change before your eyes based on what you find.
Exactly. Because it is complex, as it was approved that actually that we have assumptions, even the customer has assumptions, yeah. how it's going to look. We don't know. So we need to test quickly. We need to run experiment. We got to have a hypothesis. So it was a big pivotal moment for me that it is actually a much better ways of working. And actually it is really customer-centric, it's focusing on outcomes instead of a set of outputs.
Talking about that, plus your future experiences, then, Zolt, for projects, programs, products that you went on to look after, you must have felt the power then of why learning is essential within organizations, within cultures, why it's really necessary to develop that openness to learning. How would you define a learning organization?
So I think learning organizations for me is boils down to an organization that values, promotes having a culture of continuous learning. It's constantly looking to acquire knowledge by its members, and not only within the organization, because that's great if within the organization we share and learn from each other, but also looking outside. So not just inward looking, but also looking outside, learning actually from the customers, learning from the industry, but also a learning organization must have some platforms, forums when actually learning and knowledge sharing can happen. So establish platforms. Also, it should encourage the innovation, collaboration, experimentation. So it needs to have a culture of taking risk, having a hypothesis-driven approach to learning and so to experimentation. So there are many official definitions. I think Peter Senge, who coined this word, and one of my favorite book is The Fifth Discipline. It's another awesome book from the 80s, again, with a lot of scenarios, a lot of stories shared, not only theory. He talks about learning organization that constantly adapts to its environment and have the ability to learn and develop faster than its competitors. And he talks about five big characteristics of this around what makes it a learning organization, what helps makes it a learning organization, which is one of them is different levels of learning, which is personal mastery. So having the ability to learn, develop and grow. And I've always asked that question in surveys and other things within the organization, how much people feel like they have the ability to learn, develop, grow. So it's a personal mastery, which Damping also talks about around. That's the major characteristics behind being motivated. So it's personal mastery. But don't stop there. A learning organization does not stop at the individual level. But it's really relevant. What do we have at the team level? So it's a team level learning. I think for teams and members of the team, probably one of the most important things is to learn how to work with each other. So learning at how to collaborate often and how to share knowledge, how to actually work together, how to create an environment of safety and, you know, psychological safety where we can share information. But also, again, it's one layer, but the next layer is, which Peter Senge talks about systems thinking, but for me, it's all around organizational level learning. So optimizing learning for the whole of the organization. And that comes with, first of all, the realization it's not one single team. It's most often predominantly, it's not one single team doing from all the way from the demand or from the idea, actually creating that value to the customer, whatever it is. It's often thought about in the industry that it's one team, so let's just focus on that one team. But it's a team of teams. And so having an understanding and awareness of what are the different teams involved in the value creation, that's a number one step. But then again, learning how we work together And it doesn't need to be an organizational change, a new target operating model, which is often organizations are looking after, oh, we need to change. Actually, it's a human to human, human with human interactions, learn from each other. What are the things we can do based on our sphere of control, sphere of influence, that we can actually improve the whole end-to-end in terms of the value creation. And so that trying to remove those silos, where it's often quite formal, where, you know, you see organization where one team, maybe a shared service, asking for a template. Fill out this template and I'm going to give you an SLA and I'm going to be back with whatever you ask for. That's not learning organization. Learning organization is around, you know, how can we actually work together and what are the impediments? How do we improve the flow of value? How do we improve actually outcomes altogether? Are we aligned to the same outcomes? So that's another thing. And then also the shared, that comes for the fourth point I think he has around the shared vision and then, you know, outcomes and what's the purpose. So it's not only autonomy that we need to have, the autonomy so that you can self-organized, but also alignment to having. And that helps with the disconnected teams, because if those disconnected teams have their work and contribution to a single higher level outcome, maybe it's an annual outcome or quarterly outcome, but it's a customer impact type of outcome, business outcome, then it's all of a sudden, it's a positive step change towards that. Okay, so then our priority is actually to work together on that outcome. Let's align it. And that's what happened nationwide. And there are lots of blogs about, Tony Kang talks about that in different meetups of creating this alignment of golden thread of value, that actually having the team level and the team level work to link all the way up to outcomes and strategic outcomes is really important. Or nested outcome structure in chapter 5 in John's book, exactly about that. How do we create that structure and alignment to focusing on achieving better outcomes, delivering the right thing?
I love that. You sparked off loads of thoughts in my head, but you've not mentioned anything about frameworks there, anything about particular methods there. You've kept it very clean and very focused on outcomes. And you know what, Zol? I have not seen teams move faster ever before than when they're aligned on an outcome that they have to achieve, especially an outcome where you've got end user impact, customer impact out there in the public. And that is a very quick way to get people centered. It's because we always face the challenge, don't we? We're never, it's exactly as you said, we're never a singular team working towards that outcome. That value stream comprises of lots of other business functions who are used to working in a different way. And they also have their day jobs as well to contend with. So for them to turn their mind to however maybe a software development or a business change team is asking them now to change, focusing on that outcome really, really gets them in that frame of mind of, okay, how do I have to communicate with these other teams where I have to get this work done or achieved or over the line or discuss a concept if you're in the early stages of trying to figure out how you're going to tackle it? And then naturally from that, agility comes because people will start thinking, right, well, how do we experiment? How can we get this done quicker? How can we put something out there quickly that will test our hypothesis? So out of that, naturally, those things come.
Absolutely. I fully agree with you. And that's a really, really nice point. And one of the things we have in the book, and there is a quote from a physicist called Jeremy England. There is an interesting character. And so he says that he's studying and researching. The people are saying he's Darwin too, because he's researching how from lifeless materials can actually intelligent life form. So it's obviously it's quite a genius. But so when I reference that in terms of that, he says that, based on certain conditions, under certain condition, materials naturally or spontaneously will self-organize. So as you mentioned that if there are the right environments available, then naturally things gonna emerge. And exactly those right environment is around, I think, a couple of things. So saying what is the shared purpose in terms of the shared vision, and what is the actual outcome we are moving towards? But it should come from the customer point of view. What is the actual outcome and the customer impact? I see quite often when platforms and things are being created, and it becomes more like an agile theater, but there is a lack of customer centricity. The customer is not involved. There is no co-ownership with the actual product owner who's bringing, you know, or facing the customer and the customer outcomes being created. Having that, having minimal viable enabling constraints, right? For example, the alignment, creating the alignment, and having diversity and having autonomy. So creating those things, then naturally things gonna happen without having inflicted a framework on the organization. About that, creating those, that right environment, and also the safety element, the psychological safety that actually you can take risks, you can experiment. And that's why senior leadership has a big role in this whole thing.
The natural evolution towards agility doesn't just happen. There are bits that will naturally form, but you're absolutely right. Leadership does have to drive those behaviors and create that environment where it is safe. In the book, I love dipping into this quite a lot, Zolt. And I know you've co-written this with the author, John Smart. Can you provide an example to explain patterns and anti-patterns for creating a learning ecosystem? Some of these we have touched on, but do you know what I really love about this book? That within these chapters, you go into the patterns that you've observed and you've been part of. You also talk about anti-patterns, and you also, all of you, really candid about the lessons that you've learned. And almost like, don't do what I did, or don't do what I witnessed, sort of bearing of your souls when you haven't seen something go right, or you've been part of something where you've learned a lesson. And there's some real good honesty in there that people can learn from.
So one of the things we already mentioned that touched on is around, you know, when it is structured around silos. So that's a big anti-pattern, because we talk about that information, there needs to be fluidity, and we need to optimize for actually learning. That one of the things which is definitely prevents that we have silos. So if within teams, it could be the role-based silos. So often there is, we have a cross-functional team, great. So it's a tick box, but then are you still working in silos? So it's not a multidisciplinary team. Absolutely. So then I've seen when they start working on the with analysts and they hand over to the developers, they work together. Even I was on another pattern where the tooling, they want to make the tooling, let them know and notify them that they need to do work, because then the work moved into their silos. So when a tester was saying that, oh, I haven't seen anything, I went home because there was nothing moved into my column. So instead of that, could we just work together and ask them, how can we help each other? And although we have specializations, having a culture of pair up and swarm around, so with that, as you're saying, naturally things gonna come as we start breaking down those silos. So within the team, we start moving towards then from a deep specialism to more like having a T-shaped or pie shape, where we have a broad knowledge and a couple of specializations, upskilling ourselves, and then the team learning is happening. But also within, between teams, the silos are even bigger. And as we talked about, maybe there is a template, maybe a formal SLA, maybe it's not even clear. The different teams have different conflicting priorities. So it takes really long time to actually learn from the customer. So then visualizing that, having the people and in the room and do a visualization together to say that how actually value is being created. And so then how do we improve value creation together? So learn how we work together. That's important. So that's one. So optimizing for learning, that's a big pair. But also, I think what's really important is that, I just walked. I love doing photography, and I just walked the other day in London, and there is an area called Shoreditch, and Shoreditch of famous of street art, and brilliant, beautiful. If you love those street arts, that's famous of. So I stumbled upon a giant mural Which was all around a huge building. So everywhere is beautiful. It's giant, it's massive. And when I read about it, then it turned out that it was a work of 16 top artists. Title of that work is called The Connectivity Matters. And so that's why I took that picture, because it's beautiful. It's 16 artists. So it's a manifestation that through collaboration, we can create awesome things together.
Yes.
But also in terms of connectivity is really relevant in organization, because then there is a bubble effect, which is the information learnings are confined and kept in bubbles. And so the larger the organization it is, this effect gets even more dominance and it gets worse. And then as an individual, maybe even working in a center of enablement team, you have limited reach because you have limited network. So we know that we need to share success stories. We know that we need to surface and share those stories from the organization. But then our access is limited. So even if you start sharing it, that it's going to be quite limited reach. So instead of that, how can you actually connect those bubbles? So, and one way of doing that is creating communities of practices, which is based on invitation, so that from the different various other places around the organization, people come together and work on a common theme of their interest. And they're sharing. The key point is invitation-based, running unconferences, open space. Again, invitation-based to learn together and bring the agenda with you. So creating a safe space to learn from each other, conferences or running awards. So actually bringing all these success stories together and present and learn from each other. So connecting the disconnected bubbles through communication is an important pattern. And probably the other one is around unlocking visibility and measurability, but use it in a way which is helps with continuous improvement. And so that it's creating invitation-based and self-serve. So creating a dashboard which can be used to gather data for insights, correlations around ways of working, but don't use it as a stick. Don't weaponize it. Don't like use it as a rec status. So if there is no psychological safety around using data, people not going to use data, because the only thing they're going to do that, I need to make it green, right? So it's not what we, so it's like the watermelon. So make it green, because that's what we need to have in those portfolio leadership meetings. But it's not the underlying, not the real intent, which is making it better, improving our ways of working and improving customer outcomes. So I had a great experience recently with data nationwide, and that was publicly in a blog. It is the journey is there, and how we actually reached that self-serve nature of that dashboard, which now useful with more than 300 colleagues across the organization.
Can you talk a little bit about that, Salt? Because that is truly where I've seen a lot of good work being done by you to pop those disconnected bubbles and also to transform the way in which traditional PMO would actually start thinking about value that we're bringing into organizations, because I know you've instilled new ways of working like this. I've seen it. I've seen the golden thread that you're talking about in practice. But that takes some work, and that takes uniting a load of teams and a load of functions. How did you do this? And it'd be great to understand like the thought pattern, what goes on in Zolt's mind as you're trying to work through this.
So number one or number zero step is around creating transparency. So having establishing continuous improvement practices is awesome, but also a positive step changes, enabling changes, it's really helpful. So creating transparency. So my ambition is always like connecting work end to end, and that what comes also with unlocking measurability and the whole work on the dashboard, in terms of you have your work in your work management system, and then you have your production. And often these things are disconnected in terms of the tooling. And it's quite funny, because in terms of the tooling, we always say that, don't worry about tooling, right? Because it's only about the mindset and so on. But think about tooling as an experience. This is an experience for the colleagues. So if your So let's say for happier bit, it's my experience, but part of my experience as a colleague is working with the tooling system. So I've seen its great pattern when the tooling ecosystem is treated as a product, and which brings value to the organization and the colleagues. So you mentioned the portfolio office and so on. So if they don't have a connected data set, it can't really rely on and get insights and correlations across, because they are limited within that tool out of the box of what that tool can offer. So one of the things you can do is actually bring that data into a connected data set. And from that connected data set, then you can slice and dice and visualize. So it's like creating a data lake and then start visualizing all kinds of data. And that, so then data becomes gold. But again, it needs to be with the right intent of psychological safety so that it's not used as a stick. And that's what our approach was in this. It's based on invitation. So Everett Rogers in the 60s defined the diffusion of innovation curve, how change is being adopted. And that's the, you know, the bell curve. But in that, it's you start with the early innovators and the early adopters and innovators. And that's how we started, because we, you know, there were teams who were keen to start using some of the metrics, and we were like, great, come along. And we had like a bi-weekly show and tell. So, and asked them, could you please come along and talk about why are you using this particular flow metrics, for example? Mm. How is it helpful for you? And what have you changed on the back of that? And that is a different approach. So instead of me inflicting something, oh, you need to measure this for DORA metrics. Why? Because in the industry, so then measure lead time. What is lead time? Or why would lead time help me? How do I measure what it means in my context? Instead of that, asking them to come along and talk about how they use it. So this created a lot of attraction from other people. Oh, that's great. I didn't know in our context, actually, we can do this. Mm-hmm. So can I start using yours? So in those regular show and tells, talking about them, bringing the customer along, that was a major thing. And keep sharing, because Everett Roger talks about crossing the chasm. So for crossing the chasm for the late maturity and early maturity, you need the success story. You need that. You need the story. So you need actually, I think the positive, the positive side of this approach was that actually we try to bring the organization with us instead of inflicting anything, not even inflicting any. Similarly to creating the alignment, so that our team level work, it's that the vertical transparency, it's the alignment, having a higher alignment. Mm-hmm. As we talked about, it really helps to talking about what is the outcome which is actually in focus? If I work on something, is it aligned? If it's not aligned, why am I working on something which is not aligned to a high level outcomes?
Exactly. And this is what I loved with what you produced, because you could clearly see organizational level strategic outcomes. You could then see how they were linked to the portfolio. You could then see how those portfolios were then linked to the various different work stream outcomes. And so it focuses people. Again, it's a great communication tool, but I love the way that you did it by building that critical mass slowly through invitation. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today, Zolt. We'd love to have you back and discuss in depth more. I've loved it. What would be the takeaways that you'd love our listeners to end with?
I would suggest to the approach organizations with empathy and so every single part of the organization. It's so important that starting where we are and starting with the why, but really understanding why things are happening. So instead of inflicting something, trying to understand why things are happening, what are the pain points, what are the outcomes that the particular organization or part of the organization is seeking to improve. And then based on that context, encourage creating collaboration, encourage creating knowledge sharing, encourage moving towards a learning organization, helping leaders at all levels to actually establish that environment. That, as you were saying, that things can naturally then start happening. So creating the right environment with the right safety, psychological safety, and so on, so that autonomy happens with alignment And then, yes, great things are happening because then collaboration gonna be encouraged, experimentation gonna be encouraged. So learning actually at all levels gonna be encouraged.
If people want to work with you, connect with you, because they want to know more about Better Value, Sooner, Safer, Happier, how do they connect with you?
Definitely. So I would suggest looking at Sooner, Safer, Happier as the website. There we have trainings, we have workshops, we have simulation events. We have a lot of things to share these experience and knowledge, or just connect me directly.
Thank you again, Zsolt. Thank you, everyone. Make sure you follow us on our socials so you don't miss out on great episodes like this one. Bye for now.